Welcome back to the Sweat Elite podcast, or welcome to if it's the first time you're tuning in. It's Matt here, the founder and podcast host at Sweat Elite. Thanks for tuning into this episode. This episode is another episode of Hang With, where I hang out with a professional athlete, professional coach, or sometimes a prominent figure in the sport of running or triathlon and speak all about their training, lifestyle, or interesting facts, fiction that they might like to share with the audience. In this particular case, I speak with recently 349 miler Adam Fogg, who just competed in the World Indoor Championships in the 1500 meters. This episode is an awesome one. I really enjoy this chat with Adam. We speak all about his training. He's really leveled up over the last 3 months. He was already a 335 1500 meter runner before this season, but he recently ran 349 at the Millrose Games indoor for the mile, which well and truly puts him on the list of athletes that are going to be competing for those three positions at the Olympic Games this year for the UK. Because for those that are not familiar, the UK have, I think it's the strongest 1500 meter team in the world. It's very difficult to make their team in the 1500 meters. They have the reigning two world champs in Josh Kerr and Jake Whiteman in the last two world championships. And Adam Fogg is obviously trying to put himself in the position of trying to be on the GB team this summer at the Olympic Games. So we speak all about what's gone into his training, what his diet is like. He's made a few changes recently in his diet, his strength training. We speak all about that. We speak about a crazy long run he recently did. He did 30K at 2:13 marathon pace, I think it was, or 2:12. He put it up on YouTube for those interested in watching. He did that run as he was preparing for the Millrose Games. And yeah, there's just plenty of awesome insights in this conversation. I really enjoyed having Adam on the podcast. So I'll transition over to this recording in just a moment. But a huge thank you to the sponsor of the Hang With podcast series with Sweat Elite, that is Precision Fuel and Hydration. Precision Fuel and Hydration have been my go-to fueling brand for about a year and a half now. We've partnered with them for quite some time, and I'm a huge fan of their gels, both their regular gels, their caffeine gels, their drink mix that is very high in sodium, that's very helpful for, especially for cramping, and also their carb chews that are just the best thing you could possibly take, in my opinion, at least the best thing I could possibly take, about 30 to 60 minutes before a workout. It sits very well in the gut. It's very well absorbed and just a really good stable energy boost for the few hours after taking it, which is obviously the workout. Massive thank you to Precision Fuel and Hydration. I'm always stocked up with their products, and I highly recommend checking out their products yourself over at Precision Fuel and Hydration. And you can use the code SWEATELITE for 15% off your first order, and you can find the link in the description of this podcast to head straight to the website with the code activated as well, so you can just begin shopping straight away. Huge thank you to Precision Fuel and Hydration for sponsoring the Hang With series. That's about enough from me in this intro. I hope you enjoy this conversation with 349 miler from the UK, Adam Fogg. Adam Fogg, the Fog Dog, welcome to the Sweat Elite podcast. You're one of the only people that I know that has a very mixed accent, much like me. And when you listen to you yourself talk, people aren't really sure where you're from, same as me. But thanks for joining the podcast. I appreciate it. You've had a massive few months of awesome results, but how are you doing today?
Yeah, doing well. Thanks for that. Yeah, it's a weird one with the accent. I feel like I don't quite fit in anywhere, wherever I go, whether it's going back to Australia, not that I've been in a while, but I don't sound Australian. Then in England, anytime you speak to someone, it's, oh, where's that accent from? So
yeah,
I don't really know. I really have a home. But yeah, no, it's good to be on. Good to be having a chat. And yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
No, too easy. For those that don't know, you ran a 349 mile at Millrose Games about a month ago. Qualified yourself for the World Indoor Champs, where ultimately there wasn't the best of luck for you. We'll walk through all that. But I think we can start by talking about your last couple of years of training and racing, how you felt that they have gone. And then let's transition over to ultimately getting to these last few months where people have really noticed that you've stepped up to a new level. You're now well and truly in the mix of being selected for the UK. You obviously competed at the Indoor World Champs, so you're already in that team. You're now a very serious contender to make the outdoor team in my eyes, and I think many people's eyes. So yeah, I guess we could summarize the last couple of years, how you felt they went, and then speak about the last couple of months where you reached this new level.
Yeah, so I think when I signed with Under Armour in 2022, I was pretty fresh out of college. Obviously, I was straight out of college when I signed, fresh off my appendix surgery, which kind of ended my NCAA season a little bit prematurely. But I always felt like I was solid in the NCAA. I never really did anything that was groundbreaking by any means. I was in one NCAA final indoor in the mile in 2021, where I came fourth. And that was probably the best performance I ever had in the NCAA. So I left college, left the NCAA as a 356 miler, three-time All-American, but two of those were second team. And so I was solid, but nothing crazy. And yeah, I was lucky enough to speak to a few pro groups. And from the start of my last semester, I was speaking to Corey Leslie with the Under Armour group, which I ended up signing with. And from the start of our conversations, I really liked the philosophy behind his training and what he was saying and the goals he had for the group. It's a very new team. I would still say it's quite a new team. We've started to turn a few heads over this indoor season, I would say specifically. Last year, we had a few solid results, and the guys on the team before that, I think they were, it started decently, but we've really picked up momentum. And yeah, I guess long story short, the last couple of years being under Corey, I feel like I've really stepped up, having running as a full-time focus now. Not that I ever worried too much about my classes at college. I got the bare minimum done and got through it. But now that I don't have really too much else going on other than running, there's no excuse not to be improving with it. And thankfully, I have been able to show that over the last couple of months specifically. And I feel like I had some good momentum last year. In 2023, I ran 335 twice in the 1500, started the year with a 744 3K, which was a really solid starter for me, quite a big PB over 3K. Unfortunately, I haven't run a 3K this year yet, but I think I could give that a bit of a touch up now. I would like to hope. But yeah, then coming into this year, I think just being in a professional team with like-minded guys, we're all chasing similar goals. We all want to make national teams and be at the Olympics and run as fast as we can. We all bounce off each other. Being based in Baltimore, we get the work done as a team. And yeah, indoor, other than the end of it with UK indoors and world indoors being a little bit disappointing, probably due to things out of my control, I would say, all hindsight. But I think when you get tripped and hit the deck like that, it's not ideal. But yeah, indoor as a whole has been a real step up, and it kind of has really opened my eyes for what's possible for this outdoor season and then beyond.
Yeah, no, great answer. So you spoke a little bit to Corey Leslie's philosophy in training, and you've been with him for a few years now. But in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, you've been under the same coach for a couple of years. You obviously stepped up in 2022, ran 335, positioned yourself to be really close to the standards, and the standards now are incredibly hard, at least the, you know, official standards. But the last few months to me are like, hang on, what's he done? Is there anything new going on the last few months? And if we can speak in detail at all about Corey Leslie, and if you're able to share what the training looks like, anything, base period, transition period, racing, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, honestly, not really anything specific changed. I would say as a group, we've all been just really good and really consistent with the way we've trained. And I've always been someone in college and then early on signing with Under Armour and stuff, I feel like there's always been some little 1% things that I could have been doing better. And I feel like I mentioned this off camera before we started. Eurocross was like the turning point for me. I spoke with Corey in October about goals, and we looked back at 2023 and we agreed that I showed signs of being capable of being a really good runner, but I didn't quite break through in the way we thought was possible, and I have now shown. But Eurocross, getting selected for that, was, I would almost say, like the turning point of, all right, I've made a team now. When I then got back from Eurocross, like there were a couple of easy days and then it was full steam ahead. Coming into indoor, I really wanted to make sure I was doing everything in my power to be running as well as I could. So I feel like I really focused on those little things, and I probably improved slightly with the gym work. And I've never cooked as many homemade meals as I was when I was back in Baltimore. Like I was just doing everything I could, sleeping, hydrating, ticking off sessions, just ticking off the days every day. And yeah, I think just the good, solid, consistent work. Not a lot changed in terms of how we trained, but yeah, just really started to pay off. And I would say like end of December, start of January, going back to America through like mid-January, I was feeling like something was really clicking. And we talk about running a lot in our house, obviously, because we're all on the team together. And it was like, I really felt like indoor was going to be something special. And I knew that I was in a whole different world to what I had been ever before. And yeah, it ended up working out really well. In terms of specifics, like, it's pretty standard strength-based training. Decent mileage, nothing crazy. Like, I'll get up to 130 to 150-ish K a week during, like, October to December. We're on a nine-day training cycle, usually. Obviously, that changes with racing because you can't stick to a nine-day cycle year-round. But we'll be on that nine-day cycle. And I think it works really well because you get two easy days, hard workout, two easy days, hard workout, usually double threshold, and then two easy days, hard long run. And the hard long runs are something like we've been doing them a while, but I think like over the last few months, I've really been honing in on them and getting ripping on long runs. And not only does it build your strength as a 1500 runner, but it's given me a bit of an appetite for moving up to the roads one day. I guess I have to move through the 5K, 10K, half first before I ever even look at the marathon properly. But yeah, I think the way we train sets you up pretty well to run anything from a solid 800 all the way up to, I don't want to say a marathon yet, but I feel like I'd run a solid half.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, there's so much that I'd like to ask about here, but let's stick on the long run for a moment. And I'm curious to know what the intensity of that long run looks like and the duration of it. And if there's anything that I'm asking here that Corey wants to keep to himself, you're more than welcome to say pass. But I'm curious to know, because the long run, I think for middle distance runners is something that's, there's lots of different approaches for it. There's the whole 90 minute easy run, which a lot of athletes seem to do. Some go with an hour 45, some include hills, some include some steady state towards the end. What does the long run more specifically look like?
Yeah, so for us, and this all is subject to change during like the season, and these hard long runs is something that kind of they taper down a little bit in terms of volume and pace as the track season kind of approaches. We're not going to be racing back-to-back weeks and ripping a long run in between races. Yeah, like from October through to January, we'll be doing a pretty hard long run on day nine of our 9-day cycle, so every ninth day. And my longest, I got up to 18.6 miles, 30K. I hit 30K. Usually we have a pace cap of 320, 325 per K. And the more fit you feel, the longer you spend at that. So if you feel really good, you just kind of over the first few K, you build down to that and then you spend like a good amount of time there. It's meant to be 530 per mile, but when I'm on my own, just because I love long runs, I look forward to them too much. We were on holiday in Cornwall over Christmas, and my dad came on the bike with me. There's a video of it on YouTube, actually. I was saying this earlier, I made my bed early and I had to sleep in it. I just got straight out the gates. Like, first K was 342, second K was in the 320s, and I ended up doing 30K at 313 average. And at the end of it, I was like, that was pretty not that hard, which sounds ridiculous as a 1500 runner. But yeah, I feel like those sorts of runs are just so ideal. Like, I ran a 66 hot that day and was just like chatting to my dad the whole way. Yeah, I love those runs and I feel like they're really good for building that strength. And it pays off, obviously, for everything from the 800 up to, I guess, for me, up to the 30K.
Yeah, at this point. That's fascinating. I don't know if I've ever heard of anyone doing 30K long run at that pace, training specifically for the mile on the 1500. And I know that you raced an 800 somewhat recently as well. Yeah, so you're probably aware you're on pace. You're probably aware you're on pace for a 212 or 213 marathon there. I'm not necessarily saying you should have done that, but I'm just putting that out there. But yeah, to run a 106, seemingly sub-threshold. Yeah, sorry, you go.
No, yeah, I felt like I could have done it there and then, but I would have had my head ripped off by Corey. I think that run, even without going to the marathon, like, I think that was probably a little bit over the top. Like, we're meant to be in this 320-ish range at quickest. So you usually end up averaging somewhere from like mid high 320s up to high 330s. So 535 per mile to like just under 6 minutes, something like that as an average. But yeah, the better you feel, the longer you spend running that more solid pace. So that day in particular, I was just like, I'm gonna rip and see where I end up. And 5K in, I was like, this could be really bad. Like, I could end up just in a really bad way. But no, it never got bad. I yeah, I finished and felt like I could have done another half hour, another 42 minutes.
I very much love the way that you put the camera on. You've realized at 5K that it could be a bad one, but you've just gone, let's just see what happens here. And it ended up working out pretty well. Yeah, can confirm. Can confirm being a marathon runner now, not an elite one, but a striver for a sub-elite runner, I guess, that doing 313 per K for 30K tells me that you could very comfortably run a probably at least a 215 marathon. But I do agree that your coach probably would have ripped your head off if you did that. It would have been good for the YouTube though.
Yeah. That video, yeah, the YouTube, the thing is, no one really cares about 1500 running. Like you say, you run a whatever marathon and like people flock to that because everyone can understand the marathon. Probably the mile, like running a good mile, people understand that. And then the marathon, I guess some people know the 5K as well. But yeah, being a 1500 guy as a YouTuber, it makes you look at the marathon. It makes it look quite tempting to up the subscribers. But I don't know, I'll give it a few years, I think. But I'm not a 1500 guy who's going to stick to 1500 forever and then retire. I think I'd like to do my best while I can in the 1500 and then, yeah, rip a few more long runs and find myself on a marathon major start list one day.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go watch that video now. What else is in the 9-day cycle? And you can keep it vague, you can keep it specific, however you like to share it. But it seems like there's three key workouts in that cycle and the two easy days in between, which, by the way, I'm on a similar thing right now. One day hard, 2 days easy. Yeah, it's more of a 12-day. But yeah, what's the rest of that 9-day look like?
Yeah, it's all on Strava. And I don't think there's really a lot of secrets anymore with running. I feel like running is such a simple sport. It's you get a decent amount of volume in, you put the work in, get a few key workouts in. These days, a good amount of threshold running, maybe rip a few long runs and you'll run a fast mile. Yeah, the 9-day cycle. So day one usually is an easy double split up into like 8 and 4 or 5 miles. So the 12 to 13 mile total, usually with gym in there as well. Day two is an easy 8, 9, 10 miles, anywhere from 13 to 16K, one run with speed development usually. So a few like drills and strides and some stretches, like just our strength coach is really good, Carrie Lane. So she sets our gym programs and then also like the speed development stuff. That is one thing actually that since probably November we've been adding in, and it's, you don't feel the difference immediately, but it's probably another one of those little pieces to the puzzle where if you can get these little things right and focus on little form cues and do these sorts of drills to get a little bit quicker, it all adds up. And the more things you can get right, the more complete your puzzle is going to be essentially. So yeah, day two, easy run plus speed development. And usually with that easy mileage, we'll run anywhere from 6 to 8 miles, do speed development and then do a short cool down after. And some days we'll break it up into doing the easy run with speed development and then do a little double in the afternoon. Day three is a harder track workout, or this time of year and where we don't have races for a while, we'll do hills, like longer, like a long hill session where most of it is at a strong effort, but then we'll break it up into sets and like the last rep of each set will be a little bit shorter and like faster, so you're working on a bit of turnover. Day four, midweek long run, which is just easy. We don't get rolling on that, just time on beat anywhere from 11 to 13 miles, 17 to 20, 21K in that range. Gym again, day four. Day five, easy double, sometimes a little bit of speed development in there as well, a few strides. Day six is threshold at the right time of year, double threshold. If we've got races coming up very soon, then usually it'll just be like one bigger threshold workout. But in saying that, when we are racing, so just on a week cycle anyway, we can't stick to the 9 days. Then day seven and day eight, easy. Day seven, we always will run with a bit of not gym, but some core and like general strength sort of stuff. Day eight is actually what I'm on right now. It's an optional off day or like a short, easy run. So I've had to stay off. And then day nine is the promised land of the filthy long run. So I've got that tomorrow. It'll be my last one before World Cross. And it won't be anything ridiculous just because, yeah, being like coming into a race week. But yeah, we get moving on those long runs and it completes the 9-day cycle. And then, yeah, you recover and go again.
What's on the plan for tomorrow? Are you going to rip a full marathon? What about a half marathon in 63? What's the plan?
I'll just do an ultra. What do you reckon?
Yeah, why not?
100K.
You got to put it on YouTube though.
100K at 3:30. Yeah, no, I'll go like 16 miles. So like 25 and a half, 26K. And it is with progression. So I'll get out the door and see how I feel. And I do wear super shoes. That's one thing I get a bit of stick for from my teammates, because a lot of them won't wear super shoes. But I find on runs like that, you feel better and I find my legs recover a little bit more nicely. If you're running pretty hard for an hour and a half or whatever, I love the bounce of super shoes. And I find I feel better during the run, and then after I feel like I haven't worked quite as hard. Yeah, that is one thing that my teammates are like, yeah, you're cheating for the long run. It's a workout at the end of the day. If you're going to go out and run a pretty solid pace for an hour and a half or whatever it might be, yeah, I want to feel as good as I can. And yeah, those days are big confidence boosters. So you want them to be good.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, hugely appreciative of you sharing these insights, which I'm aware Corey Leslie has really taken some time to fine tune and understand what's the best. Couple of questions come from them before I ask you about your diet, which you've really focused on, which I find interesting too. But the threshold days, are you monitoring that workout via a lactate device, a heart rate device, feel? What does it look like?
Yeah, we always have heart rate straps on for workout days. Sometimes, like before a race, we won't. If it's a speed workout, sometimes we won't worry, but long runs where they're a workout and then threshold days, we'll always have heart rate straps on our chests. And yeah, so we always have a measure on heart rate. With lactate testing, we do sometimes. We were doing that quite a lot from like October to December and while we're away on altitude and stuff. But to be honest, I feel like specifically my numbers from week to week can vary so much. We just end up going off a mixture of like effort and heart rate and pace in general. A lot of workouts, like threshold days, if we're doing a double threshold day, we might finish in the afternoon with a 10x K on the track on a minute recovery, and we'll start at 3 flat and build down to 255 or something. And honestly, like, usually the way we go about it is you should finish and feel like you could do another 2 reps or something like that. And with that, generally our heart rates will be in the fairly consistent range for us as individuals. And so, you know, if you're working too hard or not working hard enough, but we're certainly not finger pricking for lactate levels like every day of the week by any means. That's something we do, but it's pretty rare. I feel like we know our sort of zones and stuff enough to just get the work needed done.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting. People approach the threshold quite differently. Some are just purely to feel. Some are using lactate devices every rep and can't do the next rep until they know their value of the last rep. But yeah, the approach you're taking seems to be probably most common amongst at least the elite teams of running. Yeah. Diet, you should have mentioned that you focus in on that. I know that Josh Kerr spent quite a bit of time just overhearing. I haven't spoken to him personally, but I've heard him say on a lot of different media that he's been focusing on that as well by hiring different people to help him. What inspired you in the first place, or motivated you in the first place to make changes? And then if you can speak to any of them, people love to hear about the food and the diet.
Yeah, I certainly don't have 4 or 5 employees, and I haven't hired a chef, and I'm not a great cook. I'm very I'm very lazy with my cooking, and I like to cook. And then when I cook in America, because while I'm at home, usually, to be honest, my mom's doing the cooking, which is great. And I love being at home. That's one of the reasons it makes it so good. But yeah, I like to cook. And when I cook quite a lot, and then I have my leftovers for a few nights in a row. So I end up just having the same meal like 3 or 4 nights in a row. And then when it's done, I'll do something slightly different and have it for 3 or 4 nights in a row. But overall, like, I wouldn't say loads and loads has changed from what I was doing during indoor a year ago, but I definitely have been cooking from home more. I think there were a few times where I would just Uber Eats or go out and get a pizza or some sort of fast food and stuff. And so I don't know if that really makes a massive difference, but I think I have definitely tried to cook from home a lot more. And I've been really conscious with trying to get in as many vegetables as I can. And when I'm cooking, I don't honestly particularly go for flavor. I go for simplicity, efficiency, how many meals I can get out of it, bit of like protein with either chicken or beef. They're pretty much the only two things I cook for dinner, with either pasta or rice. So it's so simple. My dinners in America, and my housemates will agree on this, I'm very non-adventurous. I'll have, chicken or beef, rice or pasta, mushrooms, onion, spinach, pepper, whatever I can find, beetroot. Yeah, I'll throw anything in just to try and get a good healthy meal. Oh, and then I've also been like cooking in the oven broccoli, cauliflower. Yeah, broccoli and cauliflower. Sometimes I'll put some mushrooms in the oven as well. But yeah, that is like a pretty standard dinner for me while I'm in America. And then every day, basically, I'll get up, start my day, have a cup of coffee. If we've got a workout, I'll have like toast with peanut butter and honey. I eat quite a few bananas just because I feel like they're good energy. They sit pretty well in my stomach and I don't really have any issues with them. And then when we get back from whether it's the track or the gym or whatever, depending on what we have, pretty much every day I have a bagel with an avocado, three eggs, bit of pepper on it or something. And yeah, that's like my lunch. So I pretty much end up doing the same thing every day. And I try and eat a good amount of fruit as well. So while I'm having that, I used to be really big on smoothies. And while I'm at home, I have a lot of smoothies with berries and bananas and chia seeds, flax seeds, stuff like that. Now it's more, most of the time, I'll just eat a good amount of fruit throughout the days, like throughout the day. Blueberries, raspberries, kiwi, oranges, they're my go-tos, blackberries. And then like at night before going to bed, I'll usually have some sort of fruit bowl. And I do treat myself. I enjoy a good pastry or going out for dinner sometimes. I'm certainly not like a monk. I won't, who will never eat anything that's not homemade. I'll still enjoy myself from time to time. And I think you have to, but I would say overall, I've tried to be really good. And carrots, that's one more thing. Little baby carrots. In January in Baltimore, I set myself a goal in my head. I didn't say this to anyone, but I think my housemates would agree. I was going through bags of baby carrots and I started by just trying to have 10 a day. But then I reckon some days I'd have 50 of them just tearing through the baby carrots. Yeah, who knows if it makes a difference, but I feel like based on how everything went, it's at least one piece of the puzzle that was going on. And I was doing my best to make sure I was eating reasonably healthily overall.
Yeah. I think the diet thing, I'm not very educated in this space, but I know that it can just in general make you feel better in training and racing. And it can also help you lose a kilo or two of weight you didn't need. I don't know if that's the case for you, but at least it does happen with me. When I clean up the diet, I tend to lose a couple of kilos, which ultimately if you keep the same everything else, you'll run quicker. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
The other thing you mentioned when we first started was the strength work. Of which that might be a little bit secretive because it's a second coach. But if you could provide any sort of overview as to what happens in the gym, I'm sure listeners will find it interesting too.
Yeah. And another thing on the diet thing is protein shakes and collagen as well. I feel like we're all pretty good with that after a track session or after a gym session, whatever it might be, got protein and I'll have a snack as well, like a banana or I don't know, bagel or something. And then when I get home, I have my proper lunch. But yeah, the gym is something I'm still pretty awful at overall. I'm pretty not incredibly strong. I'm strong enough, but it's always a work in progress. Our strength coach, Carrie Lane, sets our program and she's usually there in person with us in the gym as well. We have a gym at Under Armour headquarters in Baltimore. Yeah, we're very fortunate with our setup. We've got the track, gym, massage, saunas. Yeah, all right there because it's at the headquarters. And the gym is just pretty standard. We touch on all sorts of muscle groups. We do a bit of upper body stuff, glutes, hamstrings, quads, calves, all like the key muscle groups. We do a good amount of core and little bit of like stability work and just making sure everything is being worked. And there's a big focus on since Carrie has been our strength coach, I feel like her big focus, there's always like an agenda for the session, and there's always like a purpose like to the work and a reason for why we're doing everything, which is good. And a lot of what we do is purely at the end of the day, trying to minimize the time you spend in contact with the ground and then maximize the force you're able to put through the ground while you are on the ground. So it's her business is called Vertical Push. So it's trying to push into the ground. And I guess I'm not very good with the gym, but I guess essentially everything we do is targeted, pushing through the ground, getting off the ground efficiently, and yeah, turning the legs over efficiently to run faster overall.
And how long has the gym been in place for you? Has it been since you started with Under Armour or only more recently?
Yeah, Carrie started with Under Armour around a similar time I did. I think she came to Baltimore in September of 2022. I signed with Under Armour in July 2022, went out to Baltimore in August. So it was around a similar time. I've always been somewhat in the gym, whether it was in college or even before going to college. Sometimes in Australia, I would go and do a little bit, but this definitely now has a lot more purpose to it. And I have got stronger. The movement, I would say, overall is like more targeted at running and being efficient with pushing off the ground, basically. And yeah, while I was at college, we just did whatever we wanted to do. I would walk around the gym and do a bit of core. I wouldn't do a lot. So now, being in the gym as well with other guys who are all doing the exact same thing, maybe with me doing a little bit less weight, it works really well. And yeah, kind of just have to get the work done because you're there with your team. You're being watched by Corey and Carrie. So it's good. It's a really good environment. And I think it's another thing that adds to running overall.
Yeah. I really appreciate all the insights into the training. I think it's fascinating for me to hear, even though I'm not running 1500 a mile. But I want to hear more about World Indoor, how the experience was. Ultimately, you were tripped at the very beginning of the heat. You went through to the final and I'm actually not sure if you were injured or anything from the heat, but obviously you were 14th in the final. But I'd love to hear more about how that whole experience was.
Yeah, being picked for World Indoors was really cool. And I think that was something that a few months ago, until I really realized how well I was running and started getting close to that step, World Indoors wasn't even really on the radar. So to make the team, obviously I got put through to the final, but being able to say I am a World Indoor finalist is pretty wild and something that I wouldn't have been surprised to have been told would never happen for me like 3 months ago, especially not for this season. But yeah, overall, like incredible experience running in front of the home crowd in Glasgow. Obviously, I'm not from Scotland, but Team GB was very well supported. I think overall, everyone had a good amount of support, but the crowd was incredible. The experience was really good. Being in the meet hotel with the GB team, there are some really top level runners who I've looked up to for a long time. And I was just there, like, I was standing next to Josh Kerr in the team photo. And I guess now, yeah, for the Olympics and stuff, I've got to be focused on giving myself a chance. And I'm now up there. So I've got to not be looking up to people anymore and see myself more on an even playing field with them. Obviously, Kerr, he's a world champion and stuff. So it's a bit of a different level. But yeah, my heat was tough, pretty disappointing the way it panned out. I felt like I had a good chance of being in the top three and going through to the final. Yeah, tripped from behind, went down pretty hard. My shoulder was actually pretty sore, and it's honestly still, I can still feel it. It's pretty good now, but for quite a while, honestly, until the last few days, it's been pretty uncomfortable for running. My hip was pretty cut, my knee was a bit cut, and my hand was a little bit cut as well, but cuts were all good. I got my shoulder taped for the final, actually. And honestly, even though it was really quite painful, I didn't feel anything for the final. Like my shoulder, I didn't feel it at all. I think the adrenaline takes over and you forget about any little aches and pains. But yeah, going into the final, I was trying to talk myself into it, shaking it out the morning of. And I thought I was recovered enough after the heat and would be okay. And I was thinking if I'm in similar shape to what I was at Melrose, I'll be challenging. I might not win, but I could, if I have a perfect day, I could be in a medal race kind of thing. Obviously, that didn't work out. I got out pretty well, tried to put myself in a good spot, and just so quickly, really early on, within 500, I knew it was not going to end well, and just pretty quickly ended up going backwards and fading, and just, yeah, didn't have very much to offer on the day, but that's the way it goes. It was still good to have been a part of that final, and yeah, a good experience for going forward.
Mm. You say that you think you could have possibly come top three. The winner doesn't have a personal best as fast as you. Jordy Beamish, just looking up his profile now, 351. Now, could he have won faster than that in another race? Maybe, who knows? But you have every right, I think, to think that you could have placed top three if you had a perfect race. And just looking at the way the 1500s play out, it's often, I don't really want to call it luck. I'd love you to speak to this because you've raced way more than me at that race, a distance, but it is a situation where it's a little bit of a mixed bag in the results. And sometimes people can win and come top three and they, on paper, they might, it might be a bit of a surprise, right?
Oh, I don't think that you were,
I don't think that you were wrong in saying that you had a sniff at a medal for sure.
Yeah. And obviously it's all hindsight. I can't really say that for sure, obviously, because it's such a strong build. But I feel like if things had panned out a little bit differently, I would have been, I don't think I got to show how fit I felt like I was going in. And I think, yeah, speaking on the thing of like rankings and how races end up playing out, I think going into Melrose, I had one of the slowest PBs in the field. I think maybe two or three guys out of a 11, 12, 13 man field was slower than me on paper, and I ended up fourth. So it often does work out like that. I think on an ideal day at World Indoors in a nice fast race, I would need it to be quick because I'm not ever going to close as fast as Beamish can. But I think in a fast race, like if he was in Melrose, he might have beaten me, but I would like to think I would have been closer than I was in the World Indoor Final. So yeah, it's funny how it plays out. Some people have great days some days, some will have awful ones, and then it can turn around pretty quickly. But yeah, no, that was an incredible run for him. I think he closed in 25 or something to get the win over the last 200. He can close like a steam train. Yeah, incredible run. But like you say, not many people would have put their money on him or based on PBs.
No, I don't think anyone would have. You could maybe, you would have put some money down on a medal, maybe third if he had a good race, but it was very surprising to see him win. It was awesome to see him win, but I was very surprised as well.
Yeah.
So before we hit record, we spoke a little bit about the lead up to the World Indoors and Millrose, and you ran an 800 on the 20th of January, 1:48.38. I joked that you just missed my PB, although I know you can run a lot quicker than that if you got into a faster race. And then a week later, you ran a 353 mile, which obviously qualified you for Millrose. What are you more interested in? Are you more interested right now in 800 or in 5K? And which one do you think that you'd be more competitive in? I think I know the answer, but I'd like to hear it from you.
Well, are you leaning 800?
I'm leaning to 5K.
All these long runs.
I think you could go 13 very low in 5K. Yeah.
I would like to think so. I've run 13:58 on the track back in 2021 solo at Drake. My teammate paced me through, I think, like 2K, and then I was on my own. Yeah, I would like to think I could run a pretty solid 5K. And the 800 is okay, but yeah, I think just based on how I run and the way we train, I think moving up to the 5K over the next few years will definitely be the way I go. I'm not going to be moving down to the 800, but in saying that, like opening up indoors with an 800, kind of, it's a bit of a shock to the system. I think the plan is to do the same in the outdoor season. It kind of shocks your legs a little bit and makes 1500 pace feel not so bad. Yeah, I think that'll be the plan. But if I had to choose 800 or 5K, I would certainly be leaning towards the 5.
I'm going to ask you a hard question now, and you can pass if you want. But in the outdoor season, if you run an 800, what do you think you'd be really happy with? What do you think you'd be stoked with?
If I run one, I think I'll probably only run one, and I think it'll be at Drake. So it'll probably be windy and rainy and cold. But if I finish, it'll be a good day. I don't know. Honestly, now that I've run like 1:48.3, I think realistically, I'd want a PB moving outdoors. If, to be honest, if I won at Drake and ran 150, I'd be really happy with it because I know the field will be decent at Drake. If it's a fast race though, and I'm not going to win it, I would like to think I'd be in the kind of 147s, something like that. Maybe quicker, but it's hard to say that. 148 really didn't feel great. It was a real shock to the system. And I was pretty shocked by how fast it felt, even 200 in. And I think I went through in 27 flats. Yeah, maybe in the 147s on a perfect day, maybe dip under 147, but that's definitely not promised. That's,
I'm going to step in here and say that I actually really disagree with this. I think, look, I don't know if, are you familiar with the Tin Man calculator?
Oh, I've heard of it. I don't really look at it too often.
Now,
you're going to say that a 3.9 mile is worth like a 144 or something. So I should
143.9.
No.
But it's 143.9.
It doesn't work like that, though.
You're right. I think the Tin Man calculator is a little bit more accurate for 10K and above. I've noticed that. Okay. But I would, I'm not saying this to pump up your tires. I mean it. But I think if you can run a 3.49 mile, you should be at around 145. But I'm surprised that, that's 147. Yeah. Then we'll see how you go.
But I'm not wit. Like I can run a solid pace for a mile, obviously running 3.49, but I feel like you pick it up a tiny bit and it's suddenly all, this is really moving. Yeah, I guess we'll set the target at 143.9 for Drake Rivers. Anything slower than 143.9 and it's an awful day. And
I think you're at 143.9. I don't think you're a miler anymore. I think that's firmly in the GB team in the 800. It's very close. It's been fun talking about the other distances. What you mentioned at the start of the conversation that the marathon is, I don't think you said it's of interest, but it definitely seems like it's not of interest. I'm not going to touch on the question of when, because that's just see what happens and let's see where your mile career goes. But being a YouTuber and a very prominent one, especially in the middle distances, where, as you said, there's a little bit less interest in the crowd from the middle distances, just purely because of the participation numbers in the 5K park run, as you adhered to, and in the marathon.
Yeah.
But you're one of the more well-known people in the middle distance events that do video content, which is awesome. You probably watch, I'm assuming maybe you sometimes watch some longer distance YouTube stuff. What do you think about the marathon and anything about it would be interesting to hear from someone such as yourself?
Yeah, I watched the training video with Emil actually, because over summer 2021, I got a couple of sessions in with Phil and Emil up in Leeds. And it was really cool to see the way they train. And they do a lot of, I guess this is a few years back, it's probably changed up a bit, but a lot of like fast, strong stuff. So I think when I trained with them, we did the 4x2K at 5:35-ish with 2:15 recovery and then ripped a 1K at the end. And I dropped them both in the 1K, my claim to fame. But I think the marathon, it's such a long way off, but some of these long runs and the way we train definitely has given me a little bit of a taste for moving up in distance. And I can't say that, we definitely don't train for the marathon, but
I don't know, that 30K run at 3:13 is pretty marathon specific. Sorry to interrupt.
But then within 6 weeks of that, I ran 3:49. So within 3 weeks, I ran 148. So there's some range, but I think in future, definitely the marathon is something I'll see how the next few years ago, whatever, do my best in the 1500 while I can, and then whenever the time's right, I want to move up obviously through the 5K. I don't know if I would move up to the 10K or end up going straight to the roads, and I'm not saying by any means I'm definitely going to do this, but I'm, like you said, I'm not interested in doing it.
It's just in mind, when, perhaps in the future.
So we'll see. It may never happen. I may never run a marathon, but I'm certainly not closing the door on it for probably a few years' time.
Okay. All right. Last question I have for you today is something that you don't have to necessarily dive into too deeply, but I like to ask athletes, if they were put in charge of World Athletics or they had some decision-making power in World Athletics, they were able to maybe talk directly to Sebco, or they were in their position. Would you do anything differently about the way that the sport's run? Like, I've the point system pretty well. Is there anything that you would do? Put aside the financial thing, of course, that's a very important factor.
Yeah.
And that's probably a pretty big hindrance in the sport, not having quite enough funds flowing in to produce a good series. But if you were put in charge, or they just said to you, hey, Fog Dog, what do you reckon we should change? What do you reckon you'd say?
I always struggle with this question, to be honest. And I feel like whenever I hear someone give an answer, I think, oh, that's a great answer. Everyone seems to have some really good ideas, but I don't really know what I would do differently, because realistically it is difficult. You can't just, if track was a massively popular sport and millions of people were watching it year round, like, there wouldn't be the issues that there are with money and just, I don't even know the issues people have with it. But yeah, I think if there was a way of getting more people involved in the stories of athletes and having like more rivalries, and so that at meets crowds could know a bit more about the person behind the athlete that you see on a start line, I think it would be cool, and it would definitely generate a bit more interest in the sport. And maybe from that point, like, more people would get involved in the sport, and from having that, kids might see it, and from a grassroots level there might be a lot more people involved in the sport. There's probably loads of things that could be done differently. I really don't know what I would say, but I think, yeah, I don't know. What would you do? Do you have any strong ideas? You feel strongly about this?
I think I'm also referring to the difficulty in actually watching events. It's, you're at the event competing. So when you're doing that, your head's in the space of nailing this race. But when you try and watch an event, it seems to be very difficult to find a good stream. Sometimes they're in different platforms. I think the other problem is that what you said, you're not really getting to know the athletes really at all. And that's why I'm fans of people like you that do content that you get to know the athlete. And we've spoken about that before in the video that I joined you on a couple of years ago. And you're taking it on yourself and filming it yourself. Athletes struggle with that even when they have a videographer with them. They sometimes still can't get it organized. So I think World Athletics could help there somehow, maybe hiring a team of people to do something similar to what we do with our workout videos or what you do. I don't know. But those two things to me seem to be things that I think could be easily improved, but I don't know how easily it is improved.
Yeah. I think the thing you mentioned with like finding live stream and finding results links and stuff is appalling. A lot of the time you try and find results from a meet that happened a week ago, like quite a high level meet, and there's just like so many different links, and you can click on one and it will take you to like the previous year's meet, or it'll be like link not found, an error. There's so many times where you try and find results or a live stream, and if there was a centralized platform, a massive one, and maybe underneath there could be like sub branches of like where different content creation companies have their own little niche kind of thing. But if there was an overriding, you go to this website, you'll have all the links you need for this meet's coming up, this meet's coming up, this meet's coming up. World Cross, you click on it, it has information about the meet. Here's where you get the live stream. Here's where you get the results. I agree 100%. But I don't know how they would do it. Shouldn't technically be that hard, but I'm not going to say I'll start a company that is going to do that. There are certainly things not very accessible. And if things like that were easier, there's probably people here watching the BBC when World Indoors was on, and they might see a name on a screen and see a result and not even know where to go to look up a World Athletics profile and find out a little bit more information. But I don't know. There's probably loads of little issues like that, but I do agree with you there.
Well, Fog Dog, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast to have a chat for about an hour about all things. Some plenty of really interesting insights, especially about your training. But all the best for the outdoor season, man. I might catch you again at some point in the next few months. I'm hoping to catch you for a workout video if the stars aligned and you're joining your team, but we'll see about that. But all the best, man. Where can people follow along if they're not already following you? Where do you post your updates?
Yeah, I would say Strava. I'm on Strava, pretty much everything goes up there. Just Adam Fogg. YouTube, if you search Adam Fogg, it will come up as the Fogg Dog exclusive. That's the name I started with the channel, and I've just kept that rolling. And then Instagram as well, Adam_Fogg. So they're my main three. Yeah, I've enjoyed our chat. That would be sick to get a workout video in. So hopefully the stars align and we can make that happen.